try again.
And it is Wednesday night, the good time, the big time, the Kayak Fishing Radio Mid-Atlantic show. All things Mid-Atlantic and including New England, might as well. We got Hammerhead always on here. So now we've got the Mid-Atlantic and New England Northeast show. So we got a special show tonight, folks. We have the Crypto Cow Show. We're going to talk about the Kid the Peak cows, the Taw Tog, and everything else you find this time of year. Oh, and it helps if I say who I am. I am Mark Delaney Crew Wheeler, and welcome to the show. It's going to be a good one. We've got a group of anglers in the chat room. We have City of Ash, who lives in Jersey. I apologize for that. We have Dee Dee. What's going on, man? We have Hammerhead Greg Crisp, Mr. Mark Lozier, and the guest. All right. So let's get this thing started. Hopefully everyone had a safe and wonderful Thanksgiving. I know I did. I had a great time. Went up to Long Island. Played with those wonderful drive. But, yeah. Good time all around. Ate a lot. Thought about fishing a lot. And hit some places on the way back down. Ocean City, Maryland was getting slammed with stripers. So that's good to see. I know Jersey's been tagging them pretty good, too. So that's a good sign also. All right. We have to make a phone call, folks. Got to pay the bills. And we'll see if there it is. All right. See what happens. I know most people hear the sound, so they freak out.
Hey, hey.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's happening?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It is. Hang on. Hang on. I know it's here. Hang on. It is the incomparable Kevin Whitley. What's going on, man?
That music doesn't fit me, man.
All right, hang on. Hang on. If I was going to do it, we've got, there it is.
You can't touch this.
No.
Well, where's it at? Hang on, let's see if this will work.
Just take a sample off one of the movies.
I wish I could. I know we've got a couple sound bites here. Pretty close.
Yeah, well, that's the show intro.
Yeah, I know. I got jazz. I just don't have any of that, you know, hardcore metal stuff, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, I know. All right. We have Mr. Rob DeVore. What's going on, man?
Nothing. What are you looking for?
I'm looking for some hardcore metal. You think the metalhead who's been creating all the sound bites could create some metal?
Well, I don't have very many metal elements in GarageBand. The old Bad Backcast intro is kind of heavy, kind of.
Nah.
That's very soft.
Jesus. Yeah, we need some death metal. I need to find some on here. But anyway, it is the Kipto Cow Show, and I figured we'd get the king of Kipto Peak and the Eastern Shore on. If you don't know, when you talk to Kevin, you ask him where he wishes he was fishing right now. Most likely he'd say the Eastern Shore, going after reds, stripers, flounder, women. You name it, he's pretty much after it over there. And I hate to see an easy pass, Bill. But,
the toll across the bridge is definitely costly at the end of the year for me.
Yeah. Oh, trust me, I dipped into that, the one across back and forth a couple of times. I forgot something on the way up to New York during Thanksgiving week, man. So I feel you.
So you had to turn around and come back?
Yeah, and the worst part was I was at the third island when I had to do it, so.
Yeah.
And they don't really accept, I had to go back and stuff, I forgot.
Nope, they don't care.
Nope.
There's no discount going across that bridge.
Yeah. Put the money in the hand. So.
Yep.
All right. So, Kevin, tell me where you're at right now, man.
I'm on the Eastern Shore. Not on the water.
But you're wishing you're on the water.
Yeah, it's a little blowy over here right now.
Blowing out of the south?
Southwest, southwest. It's starting to shift around to the north. It's starting to shift up. Yeah. Looks like Thursday and Friday is our best bet right now for this week. And so we're gonna shoot for that.
Cool, man. Cool.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about, I know you have it on your website, how you approach Kipto Peak with the rods and everything. You break it down for someone who's coming. I see City of Ash, who's going to be in Jersey, is going to be coming down, hopefully. Explain to him what he should be thinking about putting in his truck when he drives down, from rods, tackle to clothing. Break it down for us, Barney style, man.
Well, you definitely need the cold weather gear. It's winter. The water temperature is when the stripers are really good, it's 47 degrees. So the water temperature is cold, and then it's December here in Virginia, so it could be freezing air temperatures out there. So, the whole no cotton base layer, fleece layer on top of that. If you can, throw another layer on top of that. Then your waders or your dry suit and then I put another sweatshirt over top of that, when it's real cold. And gloves, if you can get a good pair of gloves that can keep your hands warm. Not so much dry, but, this technique, your hands are going to get wet until you hook a fish anyway. And, and lights, because this is a nighttime fishery. So when you got to fish at night, so be ready for, your light, your headlights on and your stern light on. You need lights out there.
Right.
Now, the tackle, what's that?
Rather the better, or do you want to be like a stealthy ninja?
No, it doesn't matter. It's not going to scare the fish. You can have lights on. We fish out there with our camera lights on, and it's blinding. We have a lot of light going on. It's deeper there, so the fish aren't going to, it's not going to scare any fish away. You can be hooping and hollering up top, and the fish are down 20 feet, 30 feet down, and it's not going to bother them. If you're comfortable with a lot of light, that's good, and you want the lights out there anyway in case any boaters are coming around.
Right.
Now tackle, you want some heavier gear. You especially around the ships, when you're right next to the ships, around the pound net pilings around the ships, you want real heavy gear just so you can stay close to the fish while you're fighting. This is a boat tackle, boat rod type of stuff. That's what I'm basically using, is a boat rod, about a 5.5 foot, 6 foot boat rod, fiberglass composite. Doesn't have to be real sensitive, because it's not like a tog bite where you have to really feel it out. You don't even have to have the rod in your hands when you hook them, when you start to have it run. But I'm using 50 pound braid on a Daiwa Saltus 20 level line HA, I think it is. So it's basically a small reel, but it's still heavy enough to be able to deal with them. On that Kipto Peak how-to page, I'm showing a Abu Garcia record number 60. And every year I'm blowing those reels up. So I've moved up to a little bit tougher reel.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see it at the end of the first movie, the Kai Fish Chesapeake Bay movie, where my reel's running backwards. And that's just because towards the end of the season, I've beat them up so bad that the gears are starting to shred on them. So, you know, decently heavy tackle reel. But it doesn't have to be really big because you don't have to have a lot of line.
Yeah.
Be small. But it's good, but make sure it has a clicker on it because that's the technique.
Clicker and a decent drag.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be super duper. I mean, so we can only have so much drag on our reels at a kayak before they're pulling you off the boat. So, you know, you don't have to have 50 pounds of drag on your reels. You know, 20 or even less than that would be fine. You can always push down the line onto the foregrip. Even get a little bit more drag when you're pulling up on the fish. You could always add a couple pounds of drag by doing that. Now, the terminal tackle is just basically using a Carolina rig, a egg sinker on the main line to a swivel, 80-pound leader. It could be fluorocarbon. It could be mono. I've got fluorocarbon, but mono works fine. It doesn't have to be fluorocarbon, especially at night. It's nighttime. And I use a 10-aught owner cutting point hook. It's just a J hook. And a live eel. And that's the rig.
Now, how do you keep those eels alive, man?
What's that?
How do you keep those eels alive? I mean, for somebody who, you know, say I'm, you know, I have no idea what you're talking about when you know, keeping eels alive, you know, and how would you keep them alive and, you know, break it down for me, man.
Eels aren't as difficult to deal with as everybody thinks they are. Everybody makes a big deal about fishing with eels because they're slimy or they're hard to handle. Yeah, they're slimy, but when you land a 40-plus inch striper, you're going to get slimed anyway, so that shouldn't concern you when you're targeting these fish. When you get them from a tackle shop, you're going to give them to you in a bag or something like that. You can put them in a... What we're using is a flip-top container, like a plastic Tupperware flip-top container. And we drill holes in the bottom of that. So when you put the eels in there, their slime drains out. And the key is to keep these things out of their own slime. Eels will slime up so much they will suffocate on their own slime. Even if you have them in water, they will thicken up that water and die from suffocation from their own slime. So you want them draining the whole time. So those little holes in the bottom of the little box that we use keeps them drained out. And you can dip them in the water maybe to refresh them a little bit, but just keep them, you don't have to keep them in the water. And if you don't have something like that, a regular old minnow bucket, but roll it up on this back so the slime drains out of the top holes. That'll work fine too.
Okay. Yeah, you keep up in the slime. You know, how would I be, you know, grab a hold of this thing and put it on the hook, and how would I hook it?
You have a rag, have a, you know, wash rag, something like that, just a rag that you can grab a hold of them with. You're not going to be able to do it with bare hands and get them on the hook. You want to grab them real close to the top of the head with that rag and grab a real good grip on them and hook the eels up through the bottom jaw and either out through the eye or out through the nose, and that'll secure that hook in there. You don't want to hook them, you know, through the center of the head because you're going to hit the brain, you're going to kill them. You want to keep them alive on there, so... Through the jaw and out through the eye or the nose. And then as soon as you hook them, throw them in the water. See, if you leave them out of the water, they're going to coil up onto the line and make a big old heel ball. And then you just basically have to re-rig. You're not going to get that thing untied. So you've got to throw that, you know, and re-rig again. But as long as you get him in the water, he starts swimming down, he's not going to ball up on it as much.
Right. Okay. And then, you know, you drop it down to the bottom, and you give it a couple cranks up, right? Keep him nosing like he wants to keep on trying to get to that cover, correct?
Yeah, and I keep him, you know, basically about 3 foot off the bottom, the eel. So when your weight hits, depending on, you know, how fast your reel is, you do it before you go out there. You know, have the rod tip way up in the air, drop the weight down the bottom, and see how many cranks it takes to get that thing up where that eel is going to be 3 foot off the bottom, and do that every time you go out there. Let it hit the bottom. Crank it up 3 times, and put it in a free spool. Now, I'm using 3-ounce to 4-ounce egg sinkers out there to keep that thing right below me. So you're going to have to adjust the clutch in your reel to not let it drop so fast. So it's in free spool. The clicker's on, gives it a little bit of tension. You have to adjust the clutch just a touch to keep it from dropping to the bottom.
For someone who doesn't know what you mean by clutch, what are you talking about, clutch? You know, do I have, you know, where's the pedal for that? Is it next to the handle or?
Yeah, it's when you're looking at your reel, it's on the right hand side. It's not the drag, it's not the starter drag, but that little knob right on the reel itself, on the reel body itself, there's a little knob, and that's your clutch. So you want to tighten
right.
that up, and you'll see when you can adjust it while you're out there and play with it and see. You don't want it too tight because it messes up the way your reel is going to act once you start it, once you put it in gear. But you can have it just enough with the clicker on, because the clicker is going to hold the line a little bit too, where that he'll be able to drop as he, you know, as he's swimming, he'll be able to take some line out. You want to give him a little bit, you know, zip, 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 and he'll drop down a little bit. And, you know, just make sure you reel him up and keep him off the bottom, because once that eel gets to the bottom, gets under some rubble on the bottom, and he's never coming out. You're going to have to break the line off. So, you know, just adjust that clutch, get everything kind of even right where you want it, and make sure before you go out there, your drag is set to full strike. You know, you want it as tight as you want to have it. And you can back off during a fight, but when you first hit them, you want it tight. So have all that stuff set up when you're out there. You know, make sure it's all straight. Last thing you want to do is set a hook onto a big striper and have that drag just go, you know, you don't get the hook set.
Right. Okay, I've got the eel on the water. How would I position my kayak to, you know, present the bait and, you know, go ahead and tell me how to best present the bait. You know, do I want to be off the chips? Do you want to be right against them? I mean, what is there a happy medium?
You know, there is no prime spot out there. We've seen it over and over again where it's just, you know, where you're right there where the fish comes through. You know, I like to be on the ships. I like to be on the end of the ships or the alleyways of the ships. You know, that seems like more of a prime spot because it's got it's actually cut. The bottom gets cut out from the current that runs through the alley, which is where two ships come together. Either the bow or stern and stern come together. There's an alleyway through there. You know, it makes a real good eddy. It concentrates a lot of bait. It's just a real good spot. So we concentrate on those spots, the end of the ships, and then like the pound nets on down the way. I mean, there's dozens of pound net pilings that you can fish on, and there's no pound nets on them. But it doesn't, you know, I've seen it a dozen times where it doesn't matter. You could be off the ships. You can be drifting the ships. A lot of times, you know, Lee is famous for this. He'll be taking a picture of one of my fish, have an eel in the water, and this is out away from the ships, maybe 30 yards, and hook one, you know. It really doesn't matter. There's not a prime spot. It's not like if there's somebody in the spot that you want to be on, you know, you're going to get mad. All you have to do is just go right behind them. I've seen when the New York guys were down here, there was like 8 of them in a line along the ship wall, and the middle guy gets the run. You know, as soon as you think there's a prime spot, the guy behind me is going to get it. I mean,
right.
Just like on the first video, Lee pushed me out of a spot because I was on the end. So he kind of inches me and kind of just bullies me out of a spot. I get behind him and I hook the fish behind him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just as long as you have an eel on the water out there, you've got a shot. You got as good a shot as anybody else.
Okay. So, you know, I've been fishing the ships and it's just not working. Everyone else around me is not catching anything. What are my other options next to the pound nets, which are right next to them? You know, trying to possibly get into, you know, one of these you know, personal best and or record-setting stripers.
Yeah, it's just a matter of chance of being out there when those big ones come through there. I mean, when they come through, they come through. When they're real good, you can see everybody's hooking up. It's outstanding when it's good. But, you know, it all depends on the weather and all that stuff.
Right.
Before we get on that, let's go to when you do hook up. You know,
okay.
And one thing, when you're real close to the ships, we go one rod, because any others, when those fish will fight you right up against the wall, and you don't want any rods hanging out, grabbing on the stuff on the ships, or breaking off. You know, you're going to break your extra rod that's in the rod holder off. So we got to go one rod.
I wish I would have known that my first time.
Well, if you looked at my Kipto how-to page, I would have told you that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I talk about.
And,
you know, continue.
Now, the thing is, you know, they get up there and they're structured, just like Wheeler, when you saw at when we were catching those reds at the bridge, you know, you want to stay really tight when they're around structure, because they're, you know, if they get real far away from you and they go left and you go right and you go around the piling, or they go through the alleyways of the ship and take a right, you know, your line is on the structure.
Right.
So as long as you can stay tight to that fish, you can get pulled through and make it safe. And, of course, if you ever feel your line on the structure, put it in a free spool, paddle to the other side, and then try to get that line out, you know, because you got 50-50 chance to lose that fish if the line goes slack, but you got 100% chance of that line breaking off if you stay on the structure with tension on it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you know, two rods, during the daytime, we do the drift, you know, outside the ships or all the way up to buoy 18, which is 2 miles out along this giant 80-foot slough that runs out there. And that's a real good technique. It's you can do two rods with that, and that's a lot of fun because there's no structure around. You can do light tackle if you want. You can do all that type of stuff out there. And that's produces really well when they're around that area. And that's one line, just like your rod. You take your rod that you use at the ships with the weight on it, and you drop that down just 15 foot. Even though it's 80 foot out there, you just want to drop it down about 15 to 20 foot because you're going to fish below that looking up. And your other rod, just free line an eel. And that's a lot of fun. There's no way, you just cast it out and let that eel just swim down. And when he gets down below you, you just kind of slowly reel him up and just recast them again. And 90% of the time, fish out there are going to hit that free line eel. And that's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Now, what would you use for that free line eel? A spinning rod or a conventional? And are you using lighter line, you know?
No, I'm using the same line, 80 pound leader and 50 pound braid, and the same 10-aught undercut and point hook. And you know, the reason why I'm using 80 pound line, 80 pound leader is it's one, it's a lot better on your hand when you're leadering the fish and you land them. You know, it's big, thick line, and I wouldn't go below 60. I've seen these stripers wear through, you know, 50 pound fluorocarbon. You know, they're shaking at the side of the boat, they're sandpaper mouths, and they're that big, and they're that much pressure on them. I've seen them wear through that line. So I wouldn't go below 60-pound leader, 60 to 80. And I just use 80 because it's a lot more comfortable on my hands when I'm dealing with that fish next to me.
Yep. Now, is that fluor or mono?
It doesn't matter. I use fluorocarbon because I work at a tackle shop. But mono will be just fine out there.
Yeah.
All right. I got a quick question. Where do those eels live, like, besides the bait shop?
They're coming out of the rivers. And what's going on, what the theory is all these eels that are coming out of all the rivers of the bay are coming down and they're congregating right in this area, right in that 80-foot slough around the ships. You know, this whole area is eel alley. And so they come here, stage up before they migrate out to the ocean for the winter. So these stripers are coming in and just feeding on these eels while they're all right here. So it's just a big bait ball of eels, basically. Because, you know, these stripers come in and they got eels in their belly. It's not like they're pulling eels off of anglers' hooks. You know, these things are eating eels.
Yeah, this is also the time of year that eels travel to the Sargasso Sea, which is just southeast of Bermuda, more south, to breed. They breed and lay their eggs, and somehow the fry make it back in the bay every year. So it's one of those wild things.
Yep. So that's the theory, is that they're staging here before they're heading out.
Hmm. You know, I've caught those here before on hook and line at the Skyway Bridge one time. I'm not kidding. Man. It was the weirdest thing I ever saw. And it did the eagle ball on the end of the hook. I was like, what in that? I thought I had like a chunk of seaweed or something one time.
Well, we get these ones that are like, they could be 3 foot long and like, you know, 5 inches around, man. They're huge. We catch them a lot when we're tog fishing in the wrecks. And and I made a mistake actually trying to lip one to get my hook out of it, and that thing closed down my thumb like a car door, and it was terrible.
Oh. Oh.
But they are delicious. I can say that.
What's that?
Do you ever use the big ones for bait?
No, it was you know, it, you would think it would be good, but you'll probably fight that heel the whole time.
Yeah.
I hear those are the ones that you want to eat, though. I mean, you know, all the heels that we're getting in the tackle shops, most of the guys who are netting or trapping the heels, they're selling them overseas for food. So all the ones that we're using here for bait are just the ones that got split off for bait, and the rest of them are going over to Europe.
No kidding.
Yep. Oh, yeah. But we have a caller in, first-time caller, I think. Area code 707, you're on the air.
Spike here.
Hey, Mr. Spike, what is going on, man?
Mr. Wheeler. Happy Wednesday, fellas. How's it going?
Going good.
All right.
Yeah, I was wondering how those eels taste, man. That must be just like a little delight right there. So there's a big market for them.
Yeah. That's where most of our eel fishermen, that's what they make their money off of. Definitely that food market.
Have you ever, y'all ever seen wallets made out of eel skin?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
They make wallets. It usually comes in red or black, and they tan it, you know, dye it red or black. And it's a real popular product in the, you know, men's toiletries and luggage areas. And these aren't actually eels. They're hagfish. And hagfish, they're also, the nickname is slime eel. I don't know if you've ever seen it. And it's a Pacific eel. And basically what they do is they roam the oceans, and every time they come onto a fish or a whale carcass, they bore into it like carnivorous worms, and they eat them right down to a white bony skeleton. Anyway, there's a big market here on the Pacific coast where they take 5-gallon buckets punched full of holes, put a bait inside of it, weight it, drop it down, I don't know, about 1,000 feet to the bottom of the ocean, and they send 100% of these slime eels, and they have to be a certain size. If they're undersized, they can't work with them. 100% of that fishery here in California is shipped to South Korea for the leather manufacturing business.
Wow.
No kidding.
And they don't taste very good. I've seen them barbecued up, man. I just couldn't do it. But they let out one eel can produce, they say, gallons of slime. I would say it's quarts. And they're starting to get a little bit of exposure on all these world's most ridiculous television shows.
Yeah, right. I've seen them on those.
So you'll see them at the cleaning table, just gallons and gallons of slime coming off of these things. We're setting up here on the Pacific coast for a big wind event that's supposed to cover the next 24 hours. They say maybe gusts up to 80 miles, so you worry about the trees and the power lines and everything else around here. But other than that, I just got off a road trip to Los Angeles for holidays and business. I hope you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday.
Well,
I'm sure it was. And I'm back at my desk. So with no wind, I'm just sitting here working, not coming on the water. And it's nice to be able to come on Wednesday nights. Usually there's just so much going on.
Right. Well, Spike, man, I hope you, batten down the hatches, man. I remember the Santa Ana winds when I was in San Diego. You'd be sitting there, next thing you know, you're getting smacked with the 75-mile-an-hour breeze in your face. It's 120 degrees. Nothing like that to...
It's one of the few reasons I've ever had to call a rescue, and it was the Santa Ana's. But remember, I'm up above San Francisco now, so they're talking about this wind event coming through tonight, and then I think tomorrow it hits San Diego. But it is, you know, even though it's in Northern California too, it's still a Santa Ana event all the way. Blow you all the way to Hiroshima.
And you guys have worse up there because you guys actually have trees.
What's
San Diego, at least you have a worse up there. You guys have trees. San Diego has palm trees and people.
You know, when I was guiding on the East Coast back in 2006, I was living down there, and the resort I was at, we took Hurricane John right on the chin. It was supposed to hit south over at Cabo San Lucas. This was early September of 2006. And that little sucker turned a little bit and came up the Sea of Cortez and then, boom, hit us on the chin. Now, after Katrina, I don't understand how anybody in the world could stay near the coast when they know a big storm like that is coming. But we did, and there's something to be said about stone houses. But the people there, you know, when you're sitting in a room full of people who are the only ones left, and you're, it's your first time and you're looking around, you realize these people have been through this 15, sometimes 20 times in their lifetime. And they've been
right.
sitting near the beach and hunkering down every time. It's that one catastrophic storm that proves it all wrong. But when we came out of that thing, I came out, you talk about palm trees, I've never, and even they said they had never seen palm trees that were split in half.
Wow.
The trees always get knocked down. But, and
right.
maybe once in a while you see one of them where the top got knocked off, but there were so many palm trees from Hurricane John where that hurricane hit the beach where it just snapped the tree right in half in the middle. And that's a crazy level of wind, I tell you.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
How you got it over there on the East Coast? I think I saw some snow flurries coming through.
Not here in Virginia yet, but it's windy right now, and it's supposed to let up toward the end of the week.
Good. Wheeler, where are you located?
Virginia Beach.
Oh, Virginia Beach. Oh, that's what I thought. You still got good weather? I heard there was a big shark in North Carolina today. Did you see that on the news?
No.
Uh-huh.
A guy buys a boat. I don't remember where he was off of, but it's somewhere in North Carolina. And crystal clear water comes from the video I saw, and that was on CNN. One of the biggest adult white sharks swimming in the sea. And the guy
They're offshore.
What's that?
They're offshore. They've seen them offshore. They're tuna fishing out there, and they're seeing a lot of that stuff out there.
Yeah, and they said the warm waters brought a lot more sharks into the water. But the guy who took the video said that experience was worth every dollar he spent on his boat.
How big a shark?
You know, it looked to be 20-plus to me.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, really big. And you know,
they're out near the Gulf Stream. They're out near the Gulf Stream out there doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever you hear about, not like here where they're right up with the surfers.
Yeah, not like where you guys are right swimming with them, yeah.
Whenever you see reports of white sharks, especially, you know, from the kayak guys, a lot of people question it, you know, was it a mola, a giant sunfish? Was it another kind of shark? Because they never saw the tail. And I know one time down in northern Baja, when I had a white shark cruise me, I never saw the tail of that shark. So I was watching this guy's video on the boat today, and it was interesting. When that shark was swimming, you could always see the dorsal fin, but you couldn't always see the tail fin. Sometimes that tail fin was fully submerged.
Right.
So I figure anybody who thinks they sees the white, they see a white shark fin, it's usually a white shark.
Yeah.
Well, I remember fishing off of Clemente, you know, and what was that off of Pendleton with the Dolly Parton nuclear plant?
Yeah, it's a Dolly Parton nuclear. You're a funny guy.
Oh, right there off the five.
Two big domes right on the Pacific coast.
Yeah.
Being cooled with fresh Pacific cool salt water.
You can definitely tell because those cookie timers are popping. Sitting out there the one time, and all of a sudden my kayak gets moving. I look down, it's a, you know, 4-foot shark. I thought it was a small mako. Get back in, talk to my buddy. He's like, no, man, it was most likely a white shark. Yeah, that was a harrowing moment for me. But, you know.
Do you get salmon sharks up there?
Not this far south in the Pacific. I'm sure that's all British Columbia and Alaska. I would think up, you know, towards Washington and the Canadian border that you probably see a few salmon sharks in deeper, colder water. You guys, I mentioned it on Friday's show with Isaac. Are you aware of the shark attack here on the Pacific coast a week ago today?
No.
Oh, my. You know, I've always been really cynical about reported shark attacks and, you know, what people call, I still don't even call them great white sharks. I think the word great is a media word. They're white sharks. And by the way, I lost that battle a long time ago. But, yeah, two guys who hadn't fished together, Harry and Ted, hook up at Pigeon Point, which is just below San Francisco, and a very popular area, and a very popular area for shark sightings and bitings. And, you know, I've always been wary when somebody says attack because, A, we know nothing about sharks. B, there's the argument of exploratory and predatory. Well, this was clearly predatory. The guys were separated a little bit, probably 20, 30 yards, and Harry let out a yell, and Ted turned to see Harry's boat overturned, Harry either up in the air or hitting the water, and the 7 feet of the back shark returning to the water like it had fully cleared. You know those little seal footage they have? One of those. And there are clear. The bite marks were 17 inches across and 23 inches wide from the top to the bottom. And that covered two-thirds of his kayak, of the bottom of his kayak. I don't believe Harry ever saw the shark, but the 7 feet going into the water that Ted saw did not include the dorsal fin, which was already submerged.
Right.
Oh, my God. So they gather themselves, of course, and then they couldn't get the boat righted. So Harry had to gather his nerve, enter the water, and flip his boat back upright to get in it. I tell you, it was an unnerving Tuesday for both of them. Immediately afterwards, they took some video of the hull of the boat and audio of them on the beach, and you can find that at the website ncka.org. That's the NorCalKayakAngler.com site. Either of those links will get you there, ncka.org. And go to the safety forum. And the link is in there. The first page will give you all the great details and video of the shark bite. And just hearing it in these guys' voices, I got to tell you, two more heroes added onto my list.
Yeah, we've got the link posted on the chat room right now.
Uh-huh.
So
somebody's putting it up. Thanks, you guys.
Ain't no way I'd be getting back in the water after that, man. I'd stand on the back of my kayak and surf it in or something.
I gotta tell you, I would have grabbed a gaff and pulled it across, done something, or I just would have hopped on somebody else's boat and said, "Get me out of here."
Kevin,
and I know when to run.
On a Hobie Outback, and I mean, dude, holy crap!
It's clear evidence, you know.
Yeah.
And thank goodness that this shark didn't approach him from the side, but. Yeah, it must have been moving pretty quick, and it was only 20 feet of water. It came straight out through him and the kayak up in the air, and with quite a bit of force. Pretty crazy stuff. You know, growing up fishing Malibu, we always knew the white sharks were there, and when the great white sea bass bite of 2000 came, we pretty much predicted that we'd start seeing them about 4 days before they showed up. And generally, and again, I was younger then and probably less wise than I hope I am now. And our rule was, okay, we'll stay off the water for 2 weeks if there's been a shark sighting. But during the white sea bass bite, we just couldn't do it. You know, I mean, you had to go out. And there were four guys during the white sea bass bite who saw white sharks. And there was never an incidence, never a touch. And my big old theory that ain't worth anything was that, and this is how I voiced it to my cousin. We're sitting out there one morning waiting for the bite. Howie, don't you think that these giant white sea bass we're catching aren't going to follow the school, that they're just going to stick around, spawn out there at the end of their life cycle, which I come to find there is no end of the life cycle with these fish, and that the juvenile white sharks who aren't yet eating mammals are going to come in and pick them off. Well, I think my theory was completely wrong, but the white sharks did come in. to that congregation. They stuck around for a couple of weeks. So that's always been our rule. If the white sharks show up, you know, and that would be my rule anywhere. Florida with the bull sharks, if it gets really nasty, you know, lay off of it for a few weeks. Let them move on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to go out in San Diego. Even went after the threshers down in La Jolla. And, you know, it's nothing to shake a stick at.
So, you know, that's some fun kayak fishing, that thresher shark fishery.
Oh, yeah. I told
you man. Anything that weighs, you know, 100 to 200 pounds and goes flying out of the water, greyhounding and jumping like a marlin, it is a ton of fun. And they're not the kind, they're actually, you know, a pretty safe shark to fish for in the sense that they do tire out, and they're a stiff-bodied shark. If you were to do what we do with threshers, with makos or blue sharks or anything else, you try to grab one of those guys by the tail, he's going to do a U-turn and cut half your body off.
Yeah.
But the thresher's a real stiff shark, and, man, they're a blast.
We were catching them right there by the Queen Anne, or I think that's what it's called there in
the Queen Mary in Long Beach?
The Queen Mary, yeah.
Like they come right into the harbor. They're dangling out here from Heroes on the Water. Nailed one during a kayak fishing event over right in San Francisco Bay. I think they were fishing for stripers and halibut, and he won the thing with a thresher.
Yep.
So, no, they're real social sharks, too. They seem to come into every body of water. What do you guys got on the horizon? I hope you don't mind my talking so much.
No, man. On the horizon right now, we've got the striper bites picking up here in Virginia Beach.
Yep.
The concrete ships and everything else. I do have to put out we are mourning a loss of two kayakers in Australia.
I'm sorry to hear that, man. These were fishermen?
Yeah, first time
what
out.
What happened? Did I miss that part of the show? I can listen on the archive.
No. I was going to bring it up, and this was a perfect time. You know, these two guys, brand new to the sport, bought new kayaks, got the whole trolling motor mount put on the back of their kayak, got out there, I forget which bay it was in Australia, beautiful day, weather shifted on them, and then the next day they're fishing the bodies out of the water. I mean, just out of nowhere, they lost control, you know, by themselves, kind of. You know, kind of a sad story.
PFDs?
I couldn't find out about the PFDs, but, you know, from what I was hearing, that this bay can go from split tom to six-footers in a you know, quick second, so.
It doesn't take much.
Nope. And then, you know, being the first time out ever on a kayak, it kind of makes things rough, if you know what I mean. Miss Andrea Nunnally sent me the link on them. I'm trying to find it right now. Come on. I think she got it from Senor Salmons out of Long Beach. Hang on.
You know, it was quite a few years until I heard. I figured that this sport started gaining steam back in 95, 96. And I don't think it was until the mid-2000s that I was aware of the first fatality that, you know, somebody fishing a kayak that wasn't a heart attack or some kind of natural causes. And it was a guy in Oxnard or Ventura Harbor who had gone out kayak fishing and ended up getting blown into the jetty, and he lost his life. But as you guys know, we've suffered some losses in this sport, and man, there's never a better topic than staying safe. This is the last place we want to do our dying, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I've done two, maybe three shows on safety and. I can't stress it enough, man, you know, wearing your PFD and everything else. But I pulled up the article here. 40-year-old and 60-year-old man from Australia. See here. They actually made contact with their family through a text message saying everything was fine. And with the picture showing them that they were doing great. And then, things apparently went downhill from there. This was in Carum, C-A-R-U-M.
Yeah, I wonder if that's South Australia.
Yeah, and I've heard, I mean, if you see the picture, and I'm about ready to post it here in a second, you see the kayaks, and you can see the water behind it. It's like, oh, man, that'll make anyone's butt pucker a little bit, you know what I mean? But, I mean, that's what how people hang. Oh, there you go. Hammerhead. Damn it, you got it toward it. But, yeah. Before I get
you know, it doesn't matter if you're fishing the ocean or fishing a pond, you know, the Gulf, the intercoastal waterways. Sometimes you see that land and it looks so close and it doesn't mean a thing, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when the weather turns, I mean, a lot of stuff that we do teaching the Coastal Kayak Fishing School, which is generally a guiding day for people who want to enter the sport and cut off the learning process. It blows my mind the number of people who buy kayaks, will fish them for a couple of years and end up coming out for the guide day because either they're ruining or losing a lot of gear and or they're not catching fish. And they figure, and you know how fishermen are, they figure maybe these guys do have something to teach us. The number, the things that blow me away is how many guys don't wear a PFD when they should wear a PFD, how many guys have had their boats for 2 years and don't know how to get back on it in open water in case they fall off. And how many guys don't know how to manage a feathered paddle? And in wind, feathering your paddle can save your life. Cousin Howie proved that to me by almost losing his because he let his paddle get corroded and he couldn't feather it. He had to work a lot harder to beat those Santa Ana winds.
Right. And, you know, I'd like to have you on sometime, Spike, to explain all those feathering a paddle because personally – you just kind of jumped over my skill level with feathering a paddle.
You call me before the show and I'll write it up.
Okay, man.
Well, yeah, this Australian Kayak Fishing Forum, I know these guys. There's a great bunch of guys, too.
Okay.
So.
Cool. But you know, while I have you on, Spike, we can talk about a new video that just came out, thanks to Kayak Kettle Productions.
Right on.
The Chesapeake Bay.
Right on.
It's a sequel. So, Kevin, talk about the new video. Let's hear it, man.
What's up? The new one? The new one is...
there he is.
Hey, Spike, did you get my videos I sent you?
You know, I did, but I never got... And when you the address you sent me was illegible. So
yeah, I know, it's my handwriting's terrible. Yeah.
I just got off the road.
I'll send you an email.
I just got off the road, so we haven't had a chance to look at them yet.
Cool. Well, the one that's out now is the Kayak Fishing Chesapeake Bay 2. That is, this is just warm water species. Red drum at the shoals, flounder, summertime at the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, and sight casting to stripers and red drums in the spring and the summer.
Sweet.
So it's all warm water stuff.
It sounds action-packed.
Yeah, it's action-packed, but this one's got instructional stuff. When you watch, I sent you the first two. I sent you the Chesapeake Bay
fishing one.
And then the tour one. Yeah, so that
I'm
one.
I'm excited
the first one,
I'm struggling with those skinny water fishes.
Well, our deepest water here is 30 feet. You know, that's our average bay depth is 18 feet throughout the bay. So when you talk about,
I had a few shots at it, but I can't seem to do much beyond a gold spoon. So I'm excited to see the video.
Cool. And I'll also now that the new one's out, I'll send you that one too. So you can check that one out too.
Sweet, thanks.
Because this new one's got more instructional stuff than the first one does.
Where is there's online information for the DVDs?
Yep, guyatkevin.com.
That's it?
That's it.
Sweet. Congratulations. Good for you. You know,
thank you, sir.
I made that the kayak fishing video, and I really think with all of the electronics and the blogging and what we're doing right here, I still think that books and videos are always going to, DVDs, discs anyway, are always going to be around. When I look at my own library, when I look at the library of other anglers, and that's the great thing about the Chesapeake Bay videos, man. That's like my Maryland section, and that's totally part of my library. You know, it could be for any angler. It could be years before it ever really applies to the day they get in the kayak. But having it at home, being able to look at it anytime, and having that reference, I think there's a solid value for books and discs that we're not going to grow out of. And and that's all I have to say about that.
I know with books, you know, I've got two copies. I'll give you an example. I've got two copies of the Kevin Van Dam's Advanced Bass Fishing Strategies or something like that. I don't remember the exact name of the book because I've lost the cover on both of them.
Biblical in proportion?
What's that?
Are they biblical in proportion?
with the number of hand notes that are put into there?
Yeah.
Just about. You know.
Yeah, I hear you. There's a few for the Pacific. In fact, my guide bag, whenever I take people out on the kayak fishing school, the guide bag's got maps, books, all kinds of stuff I make them look at.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't stress enough to people that are trying to understand, you know, the concept of, you know, I need a kayak fishing book. Now, what you need to do is get in the kayak, paddle, and the fishing will come with
that's
more experience.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, because I can say this much right now. I am no kayak Kevin when it comes to on-the-water action. It's Jiminy Christmas trees, dude. I don't know if anyone said this, but Kevin, you're a freak on the water, man. And that coaching kayak around.
But that is all experience, man. That's all time out there. I mean,
it is.
Multiple years in a row, on the non-touring years, I was spending 800 hours a year on the water in my kayak. That's like, charter captain hours, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that's you know, when I was doing the expert chase and doing all that trophy chasing stuff, I was really putting a lot of time in. And that will expand your learning curve, and you know, of course, just the paddling I've done. You know,
and I'll bet people are telling you weren't working, huh?
Yeah,
I hear that all the time. One thing about the books that has really impressed me is, especially the older books. Every region seems to have a couple of volumes that are full of information about fishing, where to go, when to go, how to catch them. That has worked that was first written about 50 or 60 years ago. And the reason they keep putting that information in those books is the same reason that tackle shops carry boxes of squid and frozen minnows. And that's because those techniques have worked for the last 50 years. So I really encourage our guests to, you know, get a good library going and read that stuff. I mean, I remember the first time I saw a naked leadhead jig with a whole squid pinned to it, you know. I mean, the guy put it in his book. I mean, it wasn't even an attractive illustration. And I looked at it, and I go, well, that isn't going to sell anything to anybody except maybe a jig head. But then the more I read, man, I read about records of fish caught with a whole squid and a jig head, about people out on a boat and the only guy catching a whole dead squid and a jig head. That's why they put that stuff in those books. That's why they put spots on maps, because historically they've produced.
Right.
So.
Right. Cool.
Well, thanks for letting me join in tonight, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
Not like we had a chance, a choice. But, you know.
How right you are.
You know, it's like, it's always a pleasure. I mean, you're the, I guess, the father of modern day kayak fishing. So
thank you, guys.
How
lucky are we, huh?
I know, right?
It really is.
You know, especially, you know, this is the time to start kayak fishing. I remember going back when I first started in 2004, 2005. Oh, my God, man. You either paddled a ocean kayak or you paddled a Malibu or an ocean kayak. So, I mean, that's all we had.
And before that, 10 years before that, you either paddled an ocean kayak or an Aquaterra Prism. You remember those boats?
Oh, I saw
you
one.
You ever seen the Prism?
Once.
That was a big boat, especially on the East Coast. There's still a few of them around, and it ended up getting sold to Perception, and I think they quit making that model years ago. But especially in the Gulf around Texas, they sold, I mean, probably thousands of those. But, no, that's the way it was. I saw a copy of Kayak Angler magazine once, and it was, I'm not sure if it was a buyer's guide or what, but it was reviewing, like, the 100, and I'm not accurate on my numbers here, the 135 different fishing kayak models. And I'm like, where did they come up? I never got a chance to read it, but I'm like, where did they come up with 135 different models for fishing?
Yeah, that's
I think it's a stretch.
If they add colors, all the different colors, I guess.
You know, the truth is, there are so many different models out there that you could fish from. But I think what we see, I mean, there's probably, what, maybe 15 different models out there that are generally used for fishing?
Right.
You know, something along those lines. But, boy, and the way the sports evolve, too, is just crazy. And it's funny. It's easy to talk about. This is what I've been spending my whole darn day on. But the sport's only, you know, realistically maybe 16 years old. And the changes, but a lot of these changes, too, the sport of kayak fishing, I believe, has been able to grow because of the electronic era and the advancements in communications. You know, when I see my dad, who just tomorrow he'll be 78 years old, this guy's more savvy on a computer. The only downside of it, he's one of those guys who sends you every piece of crap via email that you never wanted to get. How can you tell him no, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, but, no, it's really advanced our sport and given us just a ton of information. And it makes it so much easier. I've seen some of your guys' sites. They're unbelievable. Guy wants to learn how to kayak fish, you know. Look at these sites. That's where you're going to get your foundation information and then get out on the water as much as you can.
Right. Well, happy birthday to you, Dad. Hope
yeah,
you,
thank you. Another spike hits a milestone.
Yeah. And I think, we actually ran out about an hour. Haven't done that in a few weeks.
Because you got a couple guys that can run their mouth on, so we help that out.
Yeah, I mean,
talking about me.
Me too, man. I was running my mouth before you came on.
It's a pleasure. I love listening to you guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure, Spike. Call anytime.
I'll try I'll call as often as I can. I look forward to talking to you next. Thanks for having me on board, and whack 'em this week, you guys.
Take care. Before we run out of time, Wheeler, we got to talk about the way these stripers and weather conditions and how long they're going to be here and all that stuff. I'm going to try to run through it quick. I know you're going to run out of time.
No,
you
I
want
got
time?
It.
You want... Oh, okay. now, these things, they've been stacked up at the high rise, which is 4 miles south of here. It's the high rise part of the bridge, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. So they're in the area, but they're also all the way up in Maryland. So this year we've got a big spread out area of these fish. Usually they're tighter in a ball. They usually come down in one big swoop, and we whack them for a while. But so this year, it seems like they're really spread out. So it's not so concentrated. And until we get that water temperature up north to come down and push the rest of them down, it won't be really hot until that happens. And that all has to do with these cold fronts and the water temperatures. Right now, we're at 55 degrees. The prime temperature for these striper is 47 degrees. So we still have a good bit of leeway before it gets into the prime spot, but then at 42 degrees, it shuts off.
Right.
And So now right now we got, you know, it's not real cold. We've got another cold front that's going to come through next week. Looks like Tuesday from when I saw the long range forecast, and that's going to be a good one. That's going to drop those temperatures down, and that should theoretically put that temperature into the right range, or at least closer to like the 50 degree range. And so that should bring a lot more down. The week after that, if we get another cold front then, that should put it in the prime spot, should be real good. Now, that all, and after that, it all depends on what comes down after that. It could be another cold front, boom, and it shuts it down to 42 degrees, those things move out, or it could shut it down to 42 degrees, it could bring another warm front up, the temperatures could run, come up to 47, level out, and they'll be on again.
Yeah, until everything starts warming up again.
It's all watching the weather, watching the temperatures, I mean, like, daily watching the temperatures and seeing where they're at, because it's pretty predictable as long as you can watch, you can see what's going on, you know.
Right.
So that's what we got going on right now. Right now, this is going just like I looked at my fishing logs. This year is looking just like 2006 when we had them in the bay through January.
Awesome sauce.
Yeah. But, you know, that's right now. You know, we can get these cold fronts, can knock it down. It can knock it down too far. It can knock it down too far, and then it's a boo. There you go.
Sorry, I've got to have fun with that. I've only been out, I've only hooked one of the big stripers down here before, and that was my first time out, and I had two rods with me, and I figured might as well say it, and I had one in the flush mount. That striper brought me right in between the chat in the alleyway, as you call it.
Yep.
And I hear, snap, and I look back, the rods broke, and then one of the guys that was still hanging on to the concrete ship just yanked the whole rod right out of the scupper, and in the drink it went. And with me looking back, I wasn't paying attention. The fish decided he was going to run underneath my boat, so I had him closer than I thought, and ripped the other rod right out of my hand. That went in the water.
Oh.
And I was sitting there with my paddle in my hand and nothing else. So, that's still some pretty bad open wounds for me there.
That's right. You get a chance of some payback and some redemption this year.
Yeah, man. Especially now, I found out I probably won't be Mr. Mom much longer. So,
cool.
I'm so set. Yeah. So ready.
Yeah.
So ready. So
yeah,
cool, man.
Yeah, we'll get out this week and we'll see what's going on, and just keep looking at the weather and keep looking at the temperature, and hopefully it doesn't get too cold too fast.
Yeah, well, like it did last year when we had snow, what, a week and a half from now?
Yeah. 2 weeks. Yeah, it was like second week of December. It was snowing and the water was 40 degrees.
Yeah.
Yep, and it never came back up again. And that's the thing, when it comes back up, just like when Sammons was here and we were doing that Game On movie, it was 42, and then it came up to 47, but he got away today. It's got to stabilize. He couldn't just go out there and catch him that same day. It was like, okay, if you were here, you know, tomorrow night is going to be the night, and it was. He went out there, and right now it's the difference between one guy catching one fish, you know, out of all the kayakers that's going to be out there during a tide cycle. That's what it is right now. That's when what I call the scouts are in here, the lead,
right.
the ahead of the pack fish. So right now we got the scouts. And when they're all here, it's multiple fish during a tide cycle, multiple people catching a fish during a tide cycle. You know, it'll be times and within that 3 hour period, you catch five fish. You know, and you're tired of catching them at that point. Your thumbs are bleeding, you're worn out, you know. So that's the difference of what's going on right now to when they're really here, when it could be a week or two before they're really here. We could just gotta watch it. Just gotta watch it.
Oh yeah. I've been living through your video. I've been dying, but I'm so stoked, so stoked for this year. You know, for the opportunity that, you know, we've got now is that we, you know, through you and other people, you know, opening up opportunities, you know, if the Bays, you know, blown out of the north or east, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to fish the tunnel for tog and stuff like that, but you can fish the ships for tog, you know, and,
yep.
And having that new opening, you know, is tip the peak. I just can't say enough, man. It's just an awesome place.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm rambling because I'm tired and I'm hungry. So,
cool.
I know you're probably going to want to get out in the water and or fall asleep before getting out in the water. So, you have any shooting?
Well, I'm not getting out of the water today. It's still blowing. What's that?
Well, hopefully it stops blowing for you. Do you have any of those shameless plugs, sponsors, people you like, products you like?
My website, kayakkevin.com, get all my sponsor list up there and videos on there and all that good stuff, and all the trailers are on there too, so you can check that stuff out.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Now, thank you for having me on, man.
All right, dude, you're more than welcome. You're always welcome. Please, show up anytime, man.
Cool.
Give me a call.
Will do.
All right, man.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, brother. Later.
Great.
All right, folks, that was Kayak Kevin. We had Dennis Spike on. If you notice, I'm kind of rambling. I do apologize. And with that, shameless plugs for the landing crew. YakAngler.com, IrishWaterDogs.com, KayakKevin.com, Angling-Addict.com. If I missed you, I apologize. But I've got two children looking at me, their plates in their hands, looking for some prosecco on dessert, and it's time for them to get to bed. Thank you, Chris, Miss Bibi Javacek. It was an awesome show. It was rocking, but definitely need some intro music for Kevin and some, you know how difficult it is to get Spike to talk? I mean, the guy is such a mute. God. Hey, him and, if you put him and Hoover together, you would be screwed. I wouldn't be able to do a show. All right. Feed the children. Wear PFD. Everybody have fun. Stay safe. City, let us know when you're coming down. We'll go fishing. Dee Dee, have a great night. Guest 1 and 2, laters. Greg, stay warm. Mr. Lozier, put on some sunscreen, you sucker. And Miss Chick, thank you and have a great night. Ladies and gentlemen, I am out. Stay safe and see you out in the water. Bye.